Get your daily market recap on the latest stock updates, monetary policy decisions, and key results and statistics that may impact your trading. Schwab Market Update is an original podcast from Charles Schwab. Listen today at schwab.com/marketupdatepodcast or wherever you get your podcasts.
Is realizing the full value of your network just a dream? Intel is bringing AI everywhere, building solutions to help modernize and monetize 5G infrastructure, making it possible for telecommunications providers to expand services and drive efficiency by reducing costs and saving energy. The next wave of networks starts with Intel. Learn more at intel.com/starts.
Welcome to the Bloomberg Surveillance Podcast. I'm Tom Keene, along with Jonathan Farrell and Lisa Abramowitz. Daily, we bring you insight from the best in economics, finance, investment, and international relations. Find Bloomberg Surveillance on Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, Bloomberg.com, and of course, on the Bloomberg Terminal. Long ago and far away, and we'll have Mike drop in here as he gets more information, particularly on those key ratios. Long ago and far away, we used to worry about what sandwich Chairman Greenspan was carrying into the Fed meetings or maybe into the inflation report. Vincent Reinhardt is expert at that. Vincent Reinhardt is with Dreyfus and Mellon and, of course, led all of our economic research at the Fed during the Greenspan years. Vince, just perfect to speak to you this morning. Thank you for joining. This micro-analysis of data post-pandemic, have you ever seen anything like it?
You mentioned Alan Greenspan, and he loved getting into the details of the data. So, you know, the fact is the Federal Reserve Board building is pretty big and it's stock full of economists, and they look into the details of all these reports. I think that the Fed Chair Powell has been extremely transparent about a very specific mechanism about inflation, the super core, the Powell's power core, really getting down into the third level of detail.
I want to make clear, John, we need to continue to look at these markets. They're narrow moves, but nevertheless, we were green on the screen with a real plunge down. And John, just as Mr. Reinhardt gives us wisdom, boom, we come right back
it's
in the equity space.
Interesting to see the FX moves as well. That's a 2% move on dollar yen, Tom, which I think is what you were looking for.
Yes, thank you. I missed that. We're now below 130.
It's a break of 130.
Stronger yen there and a euro dollar 108. We'll continue to look at those major pairs here with Vincent Reinhardt as Mike McKee dives deeper into the CPI report. Vince Reinhardt, is this inflation completely pandemic-induced, or do we have issues that harken back to when your lapels were wider?
I never wore that wide lapels, Tom, but I think the answer is, why is Jay Powell going into the details? Because it's the mechanics of inflation that has them worried. Inflation is embedded in the persistent part of the basket that households consume, that services less shelter that Mike keeps mentioning, that Jay Powell keeps mentioning, that shows up in all those speeches. And in some sense, yes, we got an inflation report exactly as we expected. We also got a reminder that the labor market is running pretty hot. From the Fed's perspective, aggregate demand has momentum. That's putting pressure on resources. That will put pressure on wages and therefore on prices. Maybe not this month on prices or wages, but the mechanics are there. The mechanism that you worry about inertial inflation is there.
Vincent Reinhardt with us and thrilled he could join this morning. Vincent, is there an underlying theory at the Fed, or are they literally making it up as they go? Is there Okun? Is there Phillips? Is there Taylor? Is there Reinhardt? Or are they flying blind?
They're doing the best they can, and it's actually pretty conventional. Inflation has a number of parts to it. John Williams talks about the inflation onion. We've gotten the good news on the outer shells. commodity prices off, energy prices in particular, off a lot. Nexshell in, goods prices are doing better because supply chains have mended, market economies work and shift resources around. They're worried about the core. They're worried about the inertial part of inflation that is importantly gets embedded into contracts that are written at different times. And so it's a slow slog in which inflation has built, and they're worried it's going to take a while for it to come down. So, yes, I think markets got what they expected, even though they were hoping for good, even better news. Don't try to get between a rally and reality. But the reality is Fed's looking at the details, and the details are supportive of two of the three planks to the story they rely on.
Hey Vince, this was great.
Momentum, slack, maybe not so much right now, wages and prices, but the other two things are the reason you worry about future wages and prices.
Vince and Ryan Hunt there, a Dreyfus and Mena. Hey, thank you, Vince, as always.
Get a concise daily market update from Charles Schwab, including the latest on U.S. and global economic news, stock updates, monetary policy decisions, and key results and statistics that may impact your trading. Schwab Market Update is an original podcast from Charles Schwab. Join host Keith Lansford for this information-packed daily market recap, delivered in 10 minutes or less. Listen today at schwab.com/marketupdatepodcast or wherever you get your podcast. That's schwab.com/marketupdatepodcast.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It's packed with benefits to help unlock more value from your business purchases. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Out of Virginia, he's really something. Leland Miller, John, with China Beige book. And, you know, you look at Leland Miller folks and you say, well, what's so special about him? He has a granularity on China like no one. He framed 6.2% GDP this morning. Leland, what do you do when you hear 6.2% GDP from some competent people like Ed Hyman? How do you react to that in China?
I think that you could get some extremely high numbers of GDP next year, but it's based on the idea that you're not just going to have the cyclical bounce back, which we expect, which is, you know, firms restarting investment after COVID zero pullback, consumers jumping back in, albeit temporarily, getting the pop off of 2022's very low basis, statistical basis. But in addition to that, in order to hit 6.2, you're going to have them layer on stimulus.
Yeah,
it could happen. You're seeing headlines about stimulus, but you have to expect them to be doing all these things at once. So it could happen, but it's much too early to be guessing that with any type of clarity.
To your expertise, like folks, the electrical grid from Shanghai out to the West, Leland Miller, if they impute a fiscal policy, can they diffuse that stimulus faster because of the power of the government, the totalitarian regime?
It depends on what kind. This is the question of 2023. And we just built a proprietary fiscal stimulus index to be able to track the flows that are going into fiscal spending. We have a fiscal activity index to see what's actually happening. And what's happened in December, for instance, is they're pumping money in and absolutely nothing happened. The activity index fell off a cliff. So it doesn't, just because you see a stimulus headline doesn't mean it's being worked into the economy. So that's the real problem with 2023. Are we going to actually see these big headline numbers and even some of this easing that we see more broadly? Will it translate into activity?
How does this economic discussion translate to the medical discussion the nation faces right now?
Well, Beijing's doing their best to pretend that COVID zero is going to be a blip for a month or two, and then they're on their way. And, to some degree, this will happen. But I think that the fact that, they're acknowledging virtually no deaths and most people are thinking they're going to see, a million deaths, you have to understand there's going to be a cascading effect, through the rest of the year. It doesn't mean you're not going to see a nice cyclical bounce back. It doesn't mean that Chinese assets aren't going to rally like crazy for a while. It just means that You know, this is not something where you can dive into, dive out of, and have no effect in the middle. And you also have the possibility that later on in the year, you have another problem with COVID. So there's a lot of potential risks here that are getting camouflaged by people's optimism over the fact that the middle of the year should look quite good.
Leland, the China that's reopening is not the China that's shut down. There is an argument from many that perhaps this consumer, the Chinese consumer, is a little bit more nationalistic. Leland, we're trying to work out where this demand actually shows up, kicks in. Does it go abroad? Do people travel to Canada, Vancouver, try and buy property like they tried to before? Trudeau's trying to stop that. Governor DeSantis is trying to do the same thing in Florida. How do you think this is going to pan out?
Yeah, there's been this idea that just because Chinese consumers haven't spent for a while, that they're going to take their money, they're going to run out of the country, and they're going to spread it around the world. This has never really been the way it works. Chinese travelers used to spend a lot of money abroad. They're not buying a lot from abroad. But I think even the travel parts have to be moderated right now. People are seeing their relatives domestically for the first time in 3 years. Plane ticket prices are through the roof. There's just a lot of guessing people are doing in terms of skyrocketing travels coming back and skyrocketing. This is coming back, and China's going to guide us into the next stage of global consumption. This has never been true. So I think we need to be very, very cautious on assuming Chinese consumers are going to do anything for the world.
Leland, just one final question from me as well. I think we're all trying to work out how much bad data we'll have to look through in the near term. And for how long, which basically is what you're touching on at the moment, Leland. How quickly do you think this will snap back in and we'll start to see that good stuff in the future?
Well, look, I think Q1 is going to be a mess. The second quarter is when you'll see a reactivation of the economy. And you're going off, very low 2022 numbers. So people could be very, very pleased with the bounce they're seeing the middle of the year. The key part is this could be a head fake, because maybe you see 3-4 quarters of growth pop back up. You're still in the midst of a long-term structural slowdown. So for the next, for most of 2023, people are going to be talking about the cyclical uptick. But then after that, as we get towards the end of the year, we're going to start re-talking about the structural slowdown, which is going in the other direction.
Leland Miller there, the CEO of China Beige Book. One of the best. Leland, just fantastic as always, sir. Thank you.
Everybody we talk to, folks, writes in a certain way. The religion of reading high-frequency economics is founded on the concision and depth of the daily reports of Carl Weinberg. He joins us right now, chief economist, the force at High Frequency Economics. In your 8 pages, Carl, with every paragraph having value, linking global eco with your concerns into the dynamics of yield, what's the single paragraph our audience needs to know right now?
Well, good morning, Tom. I think the most important observation that I've had in a long time is that everywhere I look in the world, wages are increasing by less than prices. And that tells me that you can't explain what you're seeing in prices by a wage spiral, because wage prices aren't spiraling, all right? Wages, if anything, are slowing down inflation. So we're breaking inflation into two pieces. The first is a one-time price increase that we experienced in 2022 that now is leveling off. And we look at the CPI this morning, it's almost level month to month. It's almost, and that's bringing down year-over-year rates of CPI increase that we call inflation, whether it is or not, discuss another day. And then there's the bigger problem of wages that may occur if the unemployment rate stays as low as it is. And that's what we think the Fed is watching. So while we'll all see inflation metrics come down this year, at least in the early part of this year, the Fed is still going to keep on hiking rates.
Are we still in a supply-side analysis and a timeline of supply-side analysis, even if our institutions only can do demand-side action?
Yeah, so our institutions can also do supply-side action. I mean, why do prices go up? All right. One reason is that we have too much demand, and that was, as I said before, the one-time fiscal stimulus monetized, gave people more money in their cash accounts than they needed. They bought more stuff than the economy could produce. Prices went up. That's history now. We're moving past that. But the supply side issue is that when wages go up, the supply curve shifts upward, and that raises prices. while at the same time reducing output. And that's the spiral that we want to make sure, that the Fed wants to make sure that we don't get into. That's why we're going to see them move rates up to 5% and not move them down later this year, as the market currently is believing they're going to.
You know, it's interesting, you know, President Biden's out with a tweet here: for the 6th month in a row, yearly inflation is down. I mean, that is absolutely correct. Does that not give maybe the Fed, you know, to see 6 months of declining inflation to say, hey, maybe what we've done so far is in fact working. It is cooling this economy. Maybe we can take a more cautious approach, maybe even pause in the near future. What do you think about that?
Well, you know, the Fed's job is to make sure that the inflation target is hit in the medium term, not just in the next 2, 3, or 6 months. And we forget that it was just less than a week ago, 5, 6 days ago, that we printed a labor market report which showed 200,000 jobs, 223,000 jobs being created, and an unemployment rate at a 50-year low. So, you know, everything we know about economics, everything the Fed knows about economics says that if the unemployment rate keeps on coming down or even just stays at this level, eventually we're going to get wage pressure. So that's where their eye is. You know, month to month, we will see year over year increases in prices slow down, they'll decrease, and that'll be good news. The market will treat that as falling inflation, but the Fed's eye is on the labor market.
Yeah.
And every Fed speaker, if there's only one thing that they all talk about without exception, is how tight the labor market is. It still is.
Yeah.
Inflation is still above target. We're going to see continued rate increases and sustained high rates.
Carl Weinberg, High Frequency Economics. Paul, I looked down at my phone just to see what the Red Sox were doing about shortstop.
Yep.
And the market moved.
It did.
I mean, that's right. We're green on the screen.
And it flipped.
And now I got futures at negative 33 here with the opening. The VIX 20.06. I do want to point out Brent crude, $84.18 a barrel, is elevated in gold. When was the last time I talked about $2,000?
I know. It's been ripping. I know. And it's interesting. Bitcoin up as well. So, Carl, recession call. How are you thinking about this now, given the latest CPI print? What is your recession scenario, I guess, for 2023?
Well, growth is certainly going to be slower as we move into 2023, Paul. There's no doubt about that. The Fed's hiked interest rates. Real incomes are still not keeping up with price increases. Households are drawing down savings and pulling up their credit card bills in order to maintain lifestyles. Things are going to slow. At High Frequency Economics, we think that the U.S. economy is strong enough to still power through this on the basis of strong industrial fundamentals and on the basis of normalizing economic policy. So we think we're going to avoid a recession in the United States. I won't rule one out altogether, but I think the baseline case has to be slower growth in the U.S., while the rest of the world, Europe, the U.K., Japan, all see economic contractions. For equity investors, that's a better fundamental in the U.S. from economics than we're going to see elsewhere in the world.
Carl, how concerned are you about, you know, Europe here in terms of their economy here and the impact it may have? I mean, China reopening is certainly a positive for a lot of the European manufacturing sector. But what's your view on Europe here?
Well, before we talk about Europe, I'm just going to double back on you. China reopening is a theory. And the theory, in my view, has no basis in current experience. You know, we've never seen Omicron sweep through a country and just see, you know, one and done, everything goes back to normal the next day. And the big wave of Omicron is yet to hit. You know, after the Lunar New Year, we'll see a big wave in February, and then we'll see more waves after it. And as you guys have been talking about on the program earlier, absenteeism keeps people out of the office just as much as lockdowns do. So I think China's episode with COVID and economic problems are a long way off from snapping back.
Okay.
So I think it's wrong to count about that.
It's really
Europe.
Okay, excuse me. Answer the question on Europe. My fault. I jumped in there. My fault. Please.
No, it's my fault. I didn't answer the question on Europe.
Yeah.
Europe is headed for a recession. It's been headed for a recession for a long time. Industrial output is flat. They're suffering from an energy shortage. They're in a war zone. They're in an economic war zone, and they're going to be diverting resources to defense over the course of the next year.
Right.
Interest rates are going up, and again, wages aren't keeping up with price increases.
I got 30 seconds. Your acclaimed China note. What's your GDP view on China? We got people talking 5, 6%. You don't buy that?
No, those people need to get a spreadsheet and learn about arithmetic. If the economy contracts in the fourth quarter, as we'll know about next week, all right, then it's going to be impossible for China to grow more than 3% over the course of 2023. Okay. That's just arithmetic.
Carl Weinberg, thank you so much. You know, he says that, and he doesn't realize I'm the worst user of Excel spreadsheets in history.
Get a concise daily market update from Charles Schwab, including the latest on U.S. and global economic news, stock updates, monetary policy decisions, and key results and statistics that may impact your trading. Schwab Market Update is an original podcast from Charles Schwab. Join host Keith Lansford for this information-packed daily market recap, delivered in 10 minutes or less. Listen today at schwab.com/marketupdatepodcast or wherever you get your podcast. That's schwab.com/marketupdatepodcast.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It's packed with benefits to help unlock more value from your business purchases. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
And we are privileged for a repeat performance from Dana Telsey, Chief Executive Officer and also of research at Telsey Advisory Group, on the pulse of American retail. I've got to go to the gossip of the moment, and I'm going to say this with respect. Richest guy in the world, a guy that took Louis Vuitton and figured out how to do luxury fashion. There's nepotism involved here. How do you address, is one of the most grizzled veterans on the street, when it is about relationships, if it's Prada in relationships, or it's LVMH with his daughter coming over to run Dior? Is that a plus or a minus?
Right now, it's a plus. And the reason why, these aren't new people going into those business lines. She's been involved in Dior. She's been there 20 years. So you're getting experience, and you have to say the succession planning. But look at the depth, the talent underneath her, and frankly, in each of the brands. What they have with 75 brands at LVMH, they have the experiential talent to move everyone up the line, and that's what they do.
These have log convexity. These luxury groups off China opening and the rest, you predicted this with your team, they're a moonshot right now. Can you acquire shares this morning in these heritage luxury brands?
You can, because the next development will be the reopening in China and that China consumer. We've already heard from others. I mean, look at what Neiman Marcus most recently said about the strength of the holiday season. And you're seeing the product innovation driving demand.
Right.
So I think it's going to be a good season. But let's keep in mind, we're still having consumers in all areas with the volatility of the market. There's been a step down in terms of what the rate of growth is compared to last year and even in 2021.
So one more question on luxury. Can you overweight luxury now? Is the market is overweighting luxury?
I don't think the market's overweighting luxury yet.
Really? With the moonshots we're seeing in some of these stocks?
I think there's more opportunity when the holiday sales come in, because also the ability to drive strength out of China, that's going to be the next evolution.
Single best buy now in luxury, particularly when you look to China. What's your single best buy right now?
I mean, it's LVMH in the international, it's Tapestry in the domestic. And the other one, Ralph Lauren. Ralph Lauren has a significant opportunity.
We'll go to that in a moment. I mean, you're killing me. You know how much I hate this phrase. This is Coach, right?
Right. Yes. But it's Coach, it's Stuart Weitzman, and it's Kate Spade. And what they've been able to do in resetting prices, updating the brands,
They had a home run in the Tom Wesselman. They did the Tom Wesselman thing. Is that where we're going, where these brands come in and they get famous celebrities and artists? Like, they'll do a Dana Telsey coat or something like
that? I don't know about that. It's collaborations.
Wesselman.
They matter. Collaborations drive demand. And you know why?
Right.
They go viral on social media. Everyone sees them, and there you go. Sell-through happens.
Does social media help Macy's move forward, or the big boxes that Joe Feldman looks at?
Yeah, it does. I mean, we just had a dinner with Macy's the other night. The personalization and pricing science that's being allocated to their merchandising is really helping them navigate a consumer environment that's definitely a bit more challenging for the income level of the Macy's consumer.
How do they manage expenses? At that dinner, did they talk about the cost rationalization of suburban malls that are off the mark?
Well, not only that, but what about the Bed Bath & Beyond stores that could come up for play, and there's a healthy demand, even in Marketplace by Macy's, or the off-pricers want those boxes? Those are good boxes in great locations.
For the same concept?
For Macy's, it's a different concept. It's a smaller Marketplace by Macy's concept that they put in there. But let's see what develops with these Bed Bath & Beyond locations.
My recollection is Telsey Advisor Group avoided the carnage of Bed Bath & Beyond. Let's be constructive. Why did they fail? What's the best practice forward for retail not to do a Bed Bath & Beyond?
You need branded merchandise under a halo, not just private label brands. And also you need to be able to continue to innovate the offering. And yet Home Goods out there taking share, and you didn't play up what made Bed Bath & Beyond so special. Go in there and buy more than you originally expected.
Got a lift to the market, the VIX and a stick here with Dana Telsey, a Telsey Advisory Group, watching this carefully. Less curve inversion than what we saw off the CPI report. Dana, I've got to wrap up with the guy who is iconic. Ralph is Ralph. Does he have nepotism in play like Mr. Arnault, or does he have a succession plan? He's a bit ancient.
I think overall, look at the team that you have there now with Patrice Louvet and Jane Nielsen, CEO and COO. They're taking the brand to the next level and modernizing it, and it's showing up in the numbers and the AUR, and consumers are reacting.
One question, single best buy right now for Telsey Advisory Group across all your team?
I mean, we have a bunch of names that
Amazon?
We're interested in. Joe likes Amazon. It's been a favorite name of his. But also, let's take a look at what some of these off-pricers are doing. I mean, the TJX, certainly we're watching. I would say that you look at Abercrombie & Fitch, and it's exciting.
Really?
Ralph Lauren. Yes.
Do you know that Michael McKee almost was a model at Abercrombie & Fitch years ago on Fifth
okay.
Avenue?
Well, you know, it's a different score today than it was then.
Yeah, I would have been in the pith helmet.
Everyone knows this brand. They're getting resurrected again. How's Abercrombie & Fitch going to do it? What's the pixie dust this time?
The pixie dust this time is the Abercrombie & Fitch brand has aged up. They're getting, it's better quality.
Aged up.
Yep, it's not the teens. And Hollister is showing some improvement in their assortment and getting the men's business
okay,
too.
Dana Telsey, thank you so much. We're going to age up now and continue with Keenan McKee as we age up. Tell me about the ageless comments from Harkin and also, Mike, what you see in this historic inflation report.
Well, Pat Harker is joining a crowd that says 25 basis points, and the numbers today justify that with a 1/10 drop on a month-over-month basis in December. Pushes the headline number down to 6.5%. So on the path to where the Fed wants it to be. Interesting thought here with Dana here is I'm looking at apparel costs, and everybody thought maybe we'd see a discount on that, but they're up 0.5% because men's clothes went up. Almost all of women's clothes fell. Men's and boys went up.
So the interesting thing there, company after company I spoke to over the past 3 days, men's is showing improvement, and all the retailers, inventory levels are coming down faster than expected, and that's going to be a good thing.
They told Tom he needs a new suit. The interesting thing is men's and women's shoes.
And bow tie.
Yeah, men's and women's shoes.
This bow tie is over 20 years old.
That's why.
That's the problem. To wrap this up, Dana, I'm so sorry. I've got to go to Mike here as we drive forward into the Bloomberg morning. Mike, are we going to have the same inflation frenzy 30 days from now?
Sure.
I mean, this is
because it's all about inflation for the Fed, and the Fed's going to keep going or at least hold until they are convinced that inflation's going down to 2%, and we don't know what it's going to take to convince them.
John emails in from Manhattan, and he says, ask Dana about when Tiffany opens. That's like soon, right? Like a couple months here?
Should be second half of 2023, brings more traffic to the whole area, has a restaurant in the store, too. It's going to make 57th Street
look
very exciting.
Look what they did to the prices of Schlumberger and that at Tiffany. Are you kidding me? The Arnaults are nuts.
I think
winning.
They walk around saying, take the price up. It'll create demand.
That's good. Dana Telsey, thank you so much. Our economic report from Telsey Advisory Group today. This is the Bloomberg Surveillance Podcast. Thanks for listening. Join us live weekdays from 7 to 10 a.m. Eastern on Bloomberg Radio and on Bloomberg Television each day from 6 to 9 a.m. for insight from the best in economics, finance, investment, and international relations. And subscribe to the Surveillance Podcast on Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, Bloomberg.com, and of course, on the terminal. I'm Tom Keene, and this is Bloomberg.
Just
Join Bloomberg in San Francisco or virtually on May 7th for The Future Investor, Data-Powered Transformations. This 2024 event series will examine how data is not only playing a pivotal role in investment decisions, but serves as a driving force behind the construction of innovative, investable enterprises. This series is proudly sponsored by Invesco QQQ. Register at BloombergLive.com/futureinvestor/radio.